All right. Welcome to another Fire Engineering Podcast, Networking for Success. I am your host, Dave McGlynn. If you are a first-time listener, appreciate you listening in. If you're going to be listening this later on, well, it's on iTunes or iHeartRadio or all the other avenues out there to listen to podcasts, we appreciate it. So thank you. If you're listening live, awesome again. So thank you for listening live. So for those of you that aren't familiar with the show, typically what I like to do is I like to try to bring leaders from all over and just people from all over to give their kind of background of what it is that they do and some of the things that they deal with in their own fire departments or whatever like that. I've been fortunate to have some of the best type of people out there to give their background, to give their brief. And the goal is for you, the listener, to at least try to take something away from this in knowing that, A, you're not alone in your problems, but also B, is that, you know, maybe there's something that you might hear in the conversation with my guest and everything like that that could inspire you to want to do something in your own place. So tonight I have the pleasure of having a friend of mine, a guy that I met some years back at a conference, and we've stayed in touch and we've taught at a couple different places together. He's definitely very renowned in the area that I live in and that I'm a firefighter at. And I don't know anybody that has anything ill to say about him. He's the real deal. So tonight I'm joined by Battalion Chief Floyd Wise. So Chief Wise has 30 years now, going on 30 years in the fire service, joined the fire service in 1992 in York. He's been with the city of Harrisburg for 22 years. He has a bachelor's degree in fire administration. He's working on getting his master's degree. He's a Pennsylvania State instructor. He's also an adjunct instructor with Combat Ready LLC. He's a FEMA instructor for collapse rescue operations and tech rescue. And some of the most important things to him is his wife, Carolyn, and their twin children, who I believe are seven. He's very passionate about the fire service, and he also looks like Buddy Holly, for those of you that don't know him, because he's got an epic pair of glasses. Yeah, so Chief, thank you for joining me tonight, brother. I appreciate you coming on.
Hey, I really want to thank you for the invite. It was very odd how we ended up kind of like running back into each other and then the invite that kind of came with that. But again, it's a privilege to be able to speak to whoever's out there in radio land and share some observations.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was funny, you know, we talked on the phone the other day and you know, we're spitballing a bunch of different stuff off of each other. And you're like, yeah, you know, like, hey man, you know, I love what you're doing with the podcast, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, hey, you know what? I got a show next week. You want to be on it? It just worked out, you know.
What are you doing Friday night? And I think I was like, I'm going to be on your podcast. Like,
that is exactly how
it's all good. That's
the perfect stuff, man. You know, like that's just how it works. And I love that, you know. I obviously, you know, I know who you are and your background, but for the listeners, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you're from, and what inspired you to join the fire service.
Well, I would say like my path is probably similar but a little different than many others. I discovered, you know, a lot of people out there are second, third generation firefighters, and that is highly respectful. I did not have that. I actually discovered the fire service through an ex-girlfriend. Her dad was a deputy chief, and he was always kind of bothering me. Hey, why don't you come down to the fire department? You know, you're an able-bodied male. And, you know, it seems like, you know, in the volunteer sector, we're looking for membership. And I had zero knowledge or inclination of joining the fire service. Like, I thought all fire trucks were red. And, you know, so I got brought in, and kind of lo and behold, in the short term, for whatever reason, it made sense to me. Like, I don't know why, but it, like, clicked with me that, like, there was a part of me that felt like I wanted to do something. I know this sounds really quirky, but like I wanted to do something for people, like humans, help humans be helpful in society. And as a volunteer, you know, like I went to training and did all the normal things, but I really wasn't impacted until later on when I became a live-in firefighter at Progress Fire Company 32 in Dauphin County. That's when something clicked and I realized kind of the aggressive nature of a well-tuned fire department, like that next level, so to speak. I started asking more questions and getting more involved in knowledge and trying to gain more skill. And then that's when it kind of like triggered with me that, you know, I think I might want to make a career out of this. And like anybody else, I started the testing process. Coincidentally enough, I was hired by two fire departments simultaneously at the same time, two letters of acceptance. And then I took the letter, accepted the position with the city of Harrisburg in 2000, which is where obviously I've been for 22 years now. And, you know, that has been influential on so many levels for me, sometimes positively, sometimes negatively in terms of my learning. But the people that I work with in that fire department, the firefighters, the company officers, they get it. It's a mission-oriented department that still likes to go to fires. It's an urban environment. You know, the guys that come to work want to be firefighters. So it was fortunate for me to get fostered in that culture, and hopefully I can carry that on to, you know, whatever my future is, whether it's there or elsewhere. But like, so I worked through my career process, went through all the promotional processes, you know, lieutenant, captain, and now as a battalion chief. It's been growth for me. It's been a lot of growth. I don't know if there's ever been a time that I've ever really been comfortable, you know, because I'm always, I guess just by nature, I'm trying to grow and challenge myself. Like so many in this business, you know, I'm trying to find or test my limit. And I think that's because I was mentored by people that a lot of times challenged my limit and I would say forced me or, you know, basically questioned my ability and said, what are you doing? I actually had mentors that, you know, pulled me aside and said, you know, hey, you have ability. Why are you wasting it or why you're not working harder? Like many in the fire service, I was fortunate to have some good mentors that kind of got me sparked. And, you know, in having this opportunity on a podcast, I try as much as I can to spark that same interest in others.
Yeah, man. And you hit the nail on the head when you first started talking about, you know, got into it. It doesn't sound corny or quirky or anything like that. You know, the people helping people thing, you know, there's some value and some merit to that. That's important. And it's the same thing. Sadly, oftentimes a lot of us, as we progress in our careers, we forget about the whole people helping people thing. You know, you said you just touched on some really good stuff, and you know, talking about mentors and some people that set the bar, set the standard, and held you to that standard. You know,
Chief, sometimes it was a kick in the ass. I've had a kick in the ass a few times by mentors that said, "Hey, man, you got to step it up," and they meant well, and I'm glad they did.
Yeah, I've had it too. You know, that's the thing is, even in that moment when it sucks, you know, when you're getting that tough love, or even if it's coming from somebody who doesn't wish good for you, but they're just a ill-willed person. You know, it really helps a lot of us become better,
that builds character. It builds character. It challenges your character. It makes you grow. You know, it's good for you.
Mm-hmm. No, I would agree with that. You know, the whole thick skin, you know, check your feelings at the door kind of thing, you know, like, those are always funny sayings. And, you know, sometimes I feel like we use it a little bit too far. Like, you know, when somebody's really malicious and they're kind of shitty to somebody, the whole check your feelings at the door thing, they fall to the wayside. Like you were just being a jerk to the person. But in these cases, like we're discussing just right now, it's very important to take those things in stride and use them as developmental things because it, like you said, it builds character, you know, it helps us strengthen ourselves and hopefully progress and grow into our careers, but then still going back to the people helping people, you know, passing on information, you know, trying to share that with people, trying to help people grow, you know, that all that stuff's important.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I could not agree more.
All right, so we're going to cover a bunch of things, you know, as we were talking before we started the show, and we'll cover a bunch of things up, but we'll start out just because the frame and the basis of the show is about networking and training. So we're going to be covering the importance of networking and training. So starting off, just in your experience, why is training so important?
Well, I think, like, that is such a – like, we could probably spend – 2 hours on that. I am extremely training oriented. As a matter of fact,
I know you are.
Outside of the fire department, outside of my full time job as battalion chief serving the residents, the city of Harrisburg, the majority of the rest of my time that I spend is in different educational formats, in different audiences. So as we talked about, you know, I work for the State Fire Academy in Pennsylvania. I work for two of the educational teaching agencies in the state. And then I got really super fortunate. Nick Martin saw me and determined that I wasn't completely ignorant and said, you know, hey, you want to be part of Combat Ready? So I came on board and said, yes, I would, because, again, it's another format for me to go out and speak to an audience. And I guess, you know, all I'm trying to do is pass on a love for the job that I saw a lot of people before me. Many, many people that have retired that were my instructors or were my supervisors that had a love for this job. They considered it a trade. And I'm really trying to just respect the job and pass it on like they did. And so any format I have to speak in front of a group or to work with a group or drill with a group, obviously in subject matter areas that I'm comfortable with, I take that opportunity. And I've always looked at it this way, you know, Chief, I don't know if, like, so we look at instructors in training. If you have a bad instructor, like someone who is maybe doesn't know the material, maybe instructs bad material, false material, you know, something that's not factual, or they have a corrosive attitude, they can infect and destroy the passion of hundreds of students in a lifetime. But if you have an instructor that's engaged and knowledgeable and passionate and empathetic towards the student, they can embrace and motivate hundreds, maybe thousands of students in a lifetime. So I always try to be that instructor that down the road, maybe, you know, I'm going to sound quirky, but maybe 25 years from now when I'm on a beach and I'm old and retired and I'm away from the fire service, somebody says, hey, I remember you. You taught a class, and because of something, it triggered me to go do this good thing. You know, it triggered me, or the skill allowed me to go save a child from a fire, or I was able to extricate a patient that much faster. In other words, it wasn't just an impact for me. I left an impact for the student or the firefighter, but then it also impacted long-term the public.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I'm sitting here like trying to keep little notes of a lot of the cool stuff that you're saying. That's just, it's just sparking my interest. So,
yeah, I mean, that's why, honestly, I really love fire instruction. I really do. I love it.
Yeah. You know, and like you said, you know, just the one thing I learned, you know, because we're both afforded that opportunity, which is such a great opportunity to be able to go around and teach. And while you're teaching and presenting and spreading your message, you're actually a student too. You're learning, even if it's during the break time, or after the class and you're having a discussion, you know, that stuff happens, but also, you know, you touched on something that is just, it's very near and dear to me. And it's been a huge topic, that I've been, somewhat just found myself overly enveloped in, to the point that I'm even literally in this moment, I'm writing a book about. and it is about the, you know, those instructors, those teachers that bastardize the validity of what it is that we do, or they teach bad content, or just in general, the content might be good, but they themselves are a bad instructor, and they don't realize they're hurting the fire service. Like, so you said 100 guys, right? I say it's a million. And I know a crazy broad thing, but in our business, you know, which is the next point that we're going to get at here, we network, right? Most of us talk to each other. We all talk to each other and we all exchange ideas and we shoot the shit and we exchange information, right? I'm sitting in a class and I had an instructor who was just a horrible instructor. And this guy gave me and my impressionable friends who don't know enough to be able to know that this guy's bogus, he gave us a bunch of bad information. Well, I'm now going to go and pass that bad information on to five of my friends.
And yeah, that's a great
those
point.
Five friends are now going to pass that on to five of their friends. And you see how it just grows and grows and grows. And that's where we find, you know, these bad tactics where we see like somebody's like, oh, you know, hey, it was drill night at the firehouse and we did this. And you're like, who the hell told them to do that drill? And you're not trying to pick on the department or put them on HIFTY. That's not what I mean. But just in general, you're like, you know, why did they think that that was a good idea? And it stems from shit like that. Like one or two of their guys sat in a class and a guy that shouldn't have been teaching it gave them that idea. And now they just told 30 of their members. And that's
right,
but it's happening.
Because they take that, you know, because you're in front of the audience, you're automatically granted, I guess you would say, the bully pulpit, that validity, you know, that reliability of your information. Because you're up front, you must know. And I think that sometimes, you know, and I would say, you know, you fact check that person. See, what is their background? Have they done these things? Or do they understand that tactic or that strategy? You know, are they practicing it? And you know, one other thing I want to say when you bring about training, I think that when you look at in the structures of fire departments, myself personally, I am seeking or looking for an opportunity probably in a training division, because I think that really a lot of departments are made training division, because you can set a tone, an expectation for new recruits. You can update and refresh existing staff on new knowledge. You can reinvigorate people that have been on the street and need maybe a little, you know, some positive motivation or some positive, you know, push. So I think in a department, I think your training chief, your training division is the backbone. I would say the backbone of driving the operational proficiency that's out there on the street.
Oh yeah, dude. You know, just I agree with you all day long. You're spot on. You know, just I get
and
overly passionate about this. I don't want to go
that.
Off script.
You know,
I just get overly passionate about it.
Well, no, I'm the same way. But I think when you look at training, so think about the – and you're a training chief, so think about this depth. We have to have a message for – we have to have the appropriate message for the new recruit, right? And then we have to have the appropriate message and appropriate information, a different message for the driver operator. And then we have these group of fire officers that are supervisors. They have a whole different skill set. They need to hear a different message. So we've got like this layered structure of different trainings that we have to hold, and not just training, but development, innovation, exchange of ideas, because it's not just like the train division has all the answers, but it's exchange of information up and down.
Absolutely. And with those, like you just touched on, those are all different disciplines. So with those different disciplines, there comes different levels of responsibility, different levels of skill set, et cetera.
Absolutely.
You know, it all
Absolutely.
Starts with training. You know, the training world and like we talked on the phone, I really hope that you're able to get that next part in what I know you deserve, and I know that you would do great at in your career.
I'm also hoping so. I really do.
No, so am I, man. Because I'll tell you, you know, that we need people like that mindset. You know, like a lot of people take on training as either, especially, and I'm not taking away from the volleys, like I'm going to say, in the career side, if you get some gung-ho guys, that's great. You know, they'll train all day long. But a lot of guys will just – it's a chore. You know, like, oh, come on, man. You know, seriously.
Yep. Absolutely.
And training makes or breaks the organization. And I say that, you know, like I'm not trying to sound corny when I say it. Like, it's just I have learned in my experience in driving the training division that it literally touches everyone and everything in that organization, and you as the training officer, you actually set that tone and that culture. You know, we have so many, and I'm not taking away from them. We have so many of these company officers and so many of these chief officers that they're important and their legacy is important and what they were able to pass on and their leadership is important. But the training officer realm, I didn't know it until I started doing it, is actually has more responsibility than those people who we've been cheerleading this whole time as the pinnacle of leadership. Because the training officer right. is the one that is preparing those people to become yep. those great leaders. You
really are. It's just you're kind of like the unspoken sideline coach. You're not mm-hmm. necessarily a general team. In a lot of ways, when you prepare people with knowledge and skills and then they go out and they serve the public and they do a kick-ass job, you're kind of forgotten about. But in a way, your preparation with your staff is what is that? It's that gap for whatever information that our staff need to maybe expand a service or change a service or improve a service. You know, it's our job to care enough to make sure that our people are getting that, whatever that is, it's compliance training or it's new training or whatever it is. So, I think for me, I've always been learning oriented. I mean, I think for a lot of my life, I've been in some level of education, training and education, either personally or professionally. And I think it just makes sense to me. And I do understand not everybody feels that way. But at the end of the day, this is a very technical business that, it's getting more technical when you look at all the different knowledge we're required to have. Before the blog talk started, we were talking about the, active shooter and, responses. That's an entire new avenue of information and policy and protocol that agencies have to come up with to respond and address that.
We're
already flooded with trying to prepare firefighters, prepare medics, prepare fire officers, prepare fire inspectors. Now we add this other thing, which is very important. I mean, thank God there are fire, police, rescue, and EMS agencies that respond to these events.
Right. But you are, you are right. I often attribute this, I don't know if you're familiar with the movie My Cousin Vinny, Joe Pesci's character goes on a tangent at the Marissa Tomei's character, and he says, what other shit can we pile on the top? And I think about, just in the training realm, it's like the emergency services as a whole, where there's this expectation that we're just going to always solve everything, and the public's perception is that we are an expert at whatever it is that they need solved. And
sure.
The onus goes on those leaders and those training officers is finding the balance of implementing the everyday new thing that we have to, build these people off of, while not allowing their number one skill set to diminish. We need to keep that part fresh so they don't lose it, but we also need to try to encourage them to learn these other things that we're going to be facing as a new challenge. And
sure.
Just to segue into it, because you just touched on it, so we'll talk about it now. So the next part of this is about how can networking with others help in the training program development. So I'm just going to start with the one part, because you had already started it, and then we'll be able to wrap that together with the whole networking piece. So we have found this. So let me start. Let me just back up. One, and I mean this with sincerity. I see that like politicians are getting beat up because they offered thoughts and prayers. Like that's the right reaction as an empathetic and sympathetic person to when someone is dealing with some kind of setback or some kind of tragic thing. You offer condolences and you offer thoughts and prayers. So let's start with the horrific crap that happened a couple days ago down in Texas. You're a parent. I'm a parent. So my thoughts and my prayers are 100% with those families. And in a very non-cliche way, I'm leaving today to go to work. I knew I was going to be working at 24, and I didn't want to stop hugging and kissing Angela and Michael before I left the house. You know, normally I give them, you know, a couple kisses on the forehead right before I go to work, you know. Go ahead. What'd you say?
No, I absolutely hear 100% what you're saying.
Yeah, you know, it's just, we live in crazy times. Now, outside of, because again, you both of us, you know, as dads and as parents, you know, we could go all day long about that. But in the realm of trying to keep it relevant to the topic that we're talking about, you know, we are faced with this very apparent and real issue when it comes to the active shooter responses. Okay, unfortunately, we live in a world where this has become more real. And before everybody goes on the blame game thing, the reality is it's real. So instead of blaming, let's find a way to now mitigate and then prevent it from getting worse or happening again. And that is where us as emergency responders, you know, we need to do a better job at not just keeping everything close to the vest or close to the chest, whatever saying you want to use, version of that. You know, we need to expand. We need to broaden our horizons. We need to talk to each other, to include the cops. You know, NFPA 3000 came out in 2018. We're 4 years into it. They already came out with a new version. We're not trained enough, you know. And then not only are we not trained enough, like you and I were talking before, we're not educating the public enough of the realities and you know, somewhat of the language of what it is that we do and why we do it, how we approach these. This is new for us too. You know, it's stressful for us too, because we're now in a world where we're introducing firemen to go into a situation that they weren't normally trained to do. You know, like, it was pretty simple. If somebody was shooting, the cops did it. And if a house was on fire, we did it. Well, now we're running in with them. We're wearing ballistic vests and we're wearing helmets and, you know, and we're providing a service alongside the police, which I think is beautiful in itself that a lot of places are doing great at that. But the point is we're learning as we go. And that doesn't mean that it excuses, you know, any hiccups in anything. This is new for emergency services to collaborate efforts and to execute those efforts efficiently. And how do we do that? We do it through trial and error. We do it through exposing the gaps, and we obviously do it through training. But as you know, Floyd, Chief, you've been doing this longer than me. So, you know, this business is never the same. Every emergency we go to has some sprinkling of something that reminded you of the last one, but everything always ends up being different. We can't treat everything textbook because it ends up being different. And that is the importance of why we should be networking with other people and inviting them into our world and vice versa. So that's my soapbox. Now I'll go to you, because I'll go on and on, you know, obviously.
No, like you echoed it, you said it perfectly the way you worded it. So we had this tragic event, you know, in Texas. And again, I'm much like you. I'm heartbroken for the children. I'm heartbroken for the families. You know, as a nation, and I'm not making this political, but as a nation, we have to find whatever the forces or needs are that prevent this. We have to find a method. We cannot continue. Yeah. To acknowledge the problem and say, yep, we know it's a problem and we'll get to it the next time. There cannot be a next time. So, and I'm not advocating for any, I'm not going to political discussion of advocating of what's going to happen in the country, but there has to be some solvent. What I will say about the emergency response community is this needs to drive across the nation a collaborative spirit and conversation between fire, police, and EMS. If in your communities, if you're not talking, whether it be, you know, chief of EMS to chief of fire, or chief of police to chief of fire, or supervisor to supervisor, or volunteer fire department to your local, you better start shaking hands. You better start knowing your capability because it could be your community tomorrow. And I know for me personally, I don't want to stand back and say, man, I wish we would have done one more drill. I wish we would have maybe got the radio operations worked out. I wish we would have, because there's no time for that. You can't take back what's done. You know, I think as a nation, we need to, you know, obviously corrective measures, but on the response side, we better start dialing in the police, fire, and EMS services. The day this happens, this is what the playbook's going to look like. You know, whatever, you know, 43 skidoo, and we're going to do this. And it's got to be consolidated. It's got to be consistent. It's got to be thought out. And at, like any training, it has to be practiced frequently, often, not just one time, like one drill. Like, okay, that was one drill, and we had a couple people that we pulled out. That seemed pretty successful, but we need to kind of dig into it a little bit deeper. You know, I'm a big advocate, just again, of like when it comes to training, I don't just like focusing on kind of the fire department, but I want to look at how do we cross share services? How do we cross share resources? Can your agency do to make my fire department more effective? And what can my fire department give your agency that's going to fix some problem that you couldn't fix? So that's got to happen ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. You know, and I feel, and it's not, you know, to pick on anybody, I feel like we're past the obvious, you know, well, we need to exchange that dialogue. Like we should have already done that, you know.
Yeah,
we need
you're
to start.
Exactly right. We're already behind. In essence, we have failed in terms of being prepared. And here's the sad part, and the reality is, and I'm sure anybody would agree, it's only a matter of time till it happens again. So when is it going mm-hmm. to be? Tomorrow, a month, a year? How much time do we have to basically and get our shit straight?
Yeah. And like you said before, you know, it's great if you were only able to do the one exercise. You know, it's unfortunate, but it's great that you did one. But and as you know,
it's better than nothing.
You know, but yeah, sure. But as you know, proficiency also comes off of repetition. So
sure.
You need to try to build a plan on the frequencies now. You know, like, yeah, you met. So, hey, you know, like, we did that. Let's do that again. You know, let's get together and think about
something simple, Chief. Think about this. So we have – let's say we have this active shooter event, this hostile event, right? We have somebody, whether they're barricaded or not. As it is right now, and I'll speak about myself professionally, I'm very ill prepared for that. I'm speaking about me. I'm not speaking about my agency. I'm speaking about me. I'm ill prepared. I don't know how many resources I need to evacuate a school. How many policemen does that take? How many EMS personnel will that take to move 30 or 40 casualties? For a fire, I have experience. I can estimate. I can look at a building and go, okay, I've got four addresses of fire. I need two alarms. Or that equates to three alarms. But when I look at something like that, an active shooter event, how much resources do I need to fix that? And I don't know, maybe the answer is everything in the nation. I don't know. But I don't have any experience in my slide tray, no image to compare that to.
Mm-hmm. And this is one of those, you know, just speaking on that, this is one of those type of situations where we stress on and we emphasize on the importance of having experience along with the education, coupling those two together and passing that knowledge on. But with this, I don't want you to have the experience because this is horrible. But I do want you to have the education, okay? If you never had to respond to one of these, great. But you should still know, and I'm not saying this to you, Chief. I'm saying to the audience, you should still know that it is important or at least acknowledge the importance of I need to get better educated on this. You know, my agency needs to get better educated on this. You know, like we're not ready. You know, I'm not ready. And that's okay to have that that reassurance to yourself. But then, and again, this isn't directed at you. I'm saying this to everybody. You know, then what's next then? You know, we'll have people that have experience that responded to these horrible things. And they could still tell you now, you know, they could go all over the country and be like, you know, hey, I was at, you know, the Vegas shooting or Sandy Hook, you know, and they could tell you like, you know, well, we did this and we'll, you know, I don't know what we did better. I don't know what the corrective measures were. I don't, you know, like that, it's sad, but like that's the reality is this is so weird and new. It's not new, but it's new. You know what I mean? To us that we need to start finding ways to put forth the effort into, and with effort, I also mean funding, you know. We find ourselves in this world where, you know, we got to save money, you know, make sure you guys turn the lights off at night when everybody goes to bed, you know, because we don't want to have to pay the electric bill, you know, but it's like, yeah, but then you go and you see the things that the city or the government will waste money on. So it's like, okay, well, listen, like let's get rid of the politics here, people. We acknowledge this issue. So now we as a collective whole, we as the community, we have to put forth the effort. And unfortunately, it just is what it is in this day and age. That effort may have some time and money that it's going to cost. And we have to take that serious. We can't just be like, well, you know, the frequency is, well, you know, what did Gordon Graham say? High risk, low frequency. I'm glad if it's not that frequent, but it's still very high risk and we need to be prepared for it. Chief, you there? I might have lost you. That's not good. Uh-oh. Stand by. Yeah, we did. We lost him. All right. Well, sorry, everybody. Hopefully Chief Wise is able to call back in. I got a caller from a 610 area code, so I'm going to bring you in, caller. How you doing, 610?
That's the
Who's
one.
This? Oh, that's you.
Floyd. Sorry, my phone died, and I grabbed my wife's phone, so I'm back on. I apologize.
Oh, perfect. All right. Well, that's good that I was able to look at the switchboard and see. Because you'd have just been
that was a
there
quick,
still.
Quick, that was a quick recovery. Quick recovery.
Yeah. That's a seasoned incident commander right there, bro. Good job.
One phone to the next, man. Right to the next cell. So,
that was awesome.
Yeah.
No, we were making some crazy momentum, so it actually worked. That was God's way of telling me, like, Dave, you know, like, you're getting too passionate about this. Pipe down a second. So I'm glad that happened. No, but, you know, it's just, listen, I'll go on and on about it. You're my guest. Let's get back to you. I just the point is we need to start talking to each other and working with each other and investing the efforts into how we can correct this, people. You know, it's just now is the time. Yesterday was the time. Not tomorrow. We're not going to get to it tomorrow. We need to do it now.
Yep, correct.
All right. So
where were we here? What do we got next?
Go
what do you want to chat about?
It's beautiful. So we're just talking before about the whole networking piece and how that's important incorporating that and bringing that, you know, to our organizations and how that, you know, networking with others can help strengthen our training program. So I'd like to know just more on what your thoughts are on that, but also, you know, who are some of the people since you've been doing this, who are some people you've networked with and how did that benefit you?
Interestingly enough, I've networked obviously within the fire service and outside. You know, we have our local agencies, you know, consistently at my position, networking with EMS, the police, networking with utility representatives, all the things that we typically do where we're addressing different, you know, problems throughout the day. But then I have another work that I do. I work for the Department of Community Economic Development for the state of Pennsylvania. Basically, I'm like a fire service analyst. And that job that I have as a consultant is completely based on networking, where I basically working closely with local government officials and local fire service leadership, trying to help correct some of the Pennsylvania fire service struggles, you know, that are going on that we can address. But that's networking in a different capacity, and it's a different conversation, different type of networking when you're working with local government. And obviously representing the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania at the same time. So that is a networking. And I also spend, and I think it's important for, you know, those listening to network with professional agencies. So, you know, obviously being a member of the International Association of Fire Chiefs, the International Association of Fire Service Instructors. There's massive network capacity there for any challenge or question that you can reach. I mean, today it's so simple to get on to, let's just say, the IFSI, group chat email, send in a, hey, I'm looking for something, and have probably, 30, 40 responses in no time of fellow peers in different capacities in fire departments or in emergency medical services that can guide you and give you a baseline of what they've done or something, as opposed to having to start by yourself and figure this unique problem out all on your own.
I agree.
That's also cool that you do that. I didn't know that that part about you.
Yeah,
that's really cool that you do that also.
Another time filler for me. And it was kind of cool working for the Department of Community Economic Development. So I'm able to show a different form of leadership, a collaborative leadership in helping some of the Pennsylvania fire departments look at things from different perspectives and look at options. And I really, believe it or not, as much as I love my job as a battalion chief, I love working in the city of Harrisburg, this job for me has really been beneficial also in that I'm able to kind of spread good information and help people use prudent judgment at local government levels.
Yeah, and that's important too, because we can find ourselves in that kind of situation where we would end up making the wrong decision or saying the wrong thing. So that's really cool. That's a nice thing to be part of. All right, so let's talk about you have held multiple positions in your career and throughout the fire service, but definitely in a busy city like Harrisburg. So what are some of the challenges that you faced as a leader, and then how did you overcome those challenges?
So I don't know. I have my own philosophy of leadership. So first thing I want to say is a lot of people out there, look, there's hundreds of thousands of leadership books out there, and I am not opposed to reading them. I have a library full. I read them. I love to integrate things that I believe work. I think first thing that we have to discuss with leadership is you really have to be able to lead yourself first. You have to be able to be the captain of your ship and doing the right things before you can engage in leading other groups of people. So, I think what is your personal expectation, your actions that you take or what are you contributing individually before you go out and try to, sell yourself as a leader? And the other thing, I think that leadership is very personal. Your style, your method, your communication method, how you engage with the troops is there's a spectrum from one side of authoritarian to the other side where we're team-based. I myself try to be more of a team-based collaboration type guy. I don't always like to be an authoritarian, because I think that the view of the many, the ideas of the many oftentimes can be solution than something that I'm going to put out, not having all of the information. I struggled at one time with, like many out there, I'm sure would agree, I struggled with the buddy to boss. When you go from the firefighter to the company officer, you're amongst the troops, right? You're in this small unit and you have to be the supervisor, but at the same time, you're still with the men. So there's this gray area of buddy to boss. And then it's even magnified more when you become the ultimate, like for me, when I became a battalion chief, I kind of figured out pretty quick that it felt very uncomfortable, because you really, a lot of times, are kind of standing on your own. It's a lonely position of leadership. You're responsible and you're not amongst the companies anymore. There is somewhat of a separation, and you try to minimize that. You try to be with the guys when they drill. Don't be in the office all the time. Get a cup of coffee at the kitchen table. You do all those things. but there is still somewhat of a professional separation that occurs just naturally when you move into that, I believe, when you move into that white helmet and into that ultimate boss position where you're really responsible. Like for me, I'm citywide. So I think that there was some challenges in that for me. There was some growth. I had to face the harsh reality that this is what it is. And I would put this out to anybody that's listening this evening and say that, look, if you are in the capacity or the spirit to want to step up and lead at the company level, you're going to have to face the fact that it's inevitably going to be uncomfortable. I think leadership in itself is uncomfortable because you are going to be forced to have to make sooner or later, could be every day, difficult decisions in dealing with different types of people, especially amongst the fire service. We have a really unique blend of people and cultures in our fire departments. It is uncomfortable, and you've got to learn to work through that. So here's, Chief, here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to ask you this question. I'm going to kind of bounce a question back to you. Give me your opinion on this. So we talk about courage. We talk about firefighters being courageous, right? Like firefighters are courageous. They do searches, and they suppress fire, and they run into buildings. They save, families, and that's all wonderful. But there is a unique type of courage in leadership, because oftentimes you must be the single person standing alone against the mass of people that have a differing opinion and say, I disagree with something that we're doing. And in that, you put yourself outside of the team. You put yourself outside of the tribe. That's a lonely place to be. It's a vulnerable place to be. But I think that there is a significant amount of courage to be had in being a chief officer and a leader. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I. So when you said that you were going to ask me a question, I started thinking about, as you're asking it, you know, my response to that, and then you said it, and it's that vulnerability piece, right? Not in an arrogant frame, but just in a realistic frame, and I know that you'll be able to empathize with me here. Is that expression, heavy weighs the crown.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah, if you care about people and you care about your organization, there's going to be a lot of things that you'll wonder if you're on an island. You'll wonder if they get it. You'll wonder how they received it. You'll wonder if they hate you. And it goes on both ends. I learned, being in both of our positions, and in Harrisburg, you guys call him a battalion chief, but you're a shift supervisor, you're the incident commander, a division lead. So you guys have the three bugles just like I do. You know, it's an assistant chief position for me, and where I'm from. But so we do the same thing is the point. And when you're in that position, you're beyond midway, okay? You're almost now at the top. But It becomes more apparent that top cover support is more important now than it was when you were on the floor, when you were a company officer. The success of your ability to be a leadership manager, okay, is based on how the men or, and the women, how the workforce, how the guys on the floor, how they perceive you, how they relate to you, your ability to be able to navigate through at times. I'm going to be alone on this decision, and I got to see it through because I know in my heart it's right. But then we still have that person that we have to answer to. So even if we have the full buy-in and support from the floor, we may have that one person who has the final stamp of approval, and they may not be in favor of it. Where again, you find yourself on this island, because you don't want to be a bad steward to the chief and go back to the floor and say, he's an idiot. You believe he shot me down on this? So it's a very frustrating position. And, the buddy to boss thing, I have both of Chase Sargent's books. I actually gifted one to a buddy of mine when he first made lieutenant, and now he's recently gotten promoted to captain. When I was up at West Point, he was a fireman when I got there, And I gave him the book because he's a sweet guy. He's got a great heart, and I knew he could be a great leader. And I wanted him to understand that there is this balance, and it's so hard to toe that line. Like, even a guy like me, like I always say, like, I do my best work in the firehouse. You know, like when I'm with the men, when I'm shooting the shit with them, when I'm out at the drill, if I'm out on a call, or if I'm just sitting at the kitchen table, that is where I do my best work with the people. Pushing the desk is not the thing I'm great at. And unfortunately, it's my job now.
Right. As chief officers, we do have to do that. But that should not be the entirety of our existence, because it is necessary for us to stay basically plugged into what the mission is, which is still serving the public, going to the fires, you know, leading the men and solving these public issues. And, you know, you brought up an interesting point. When you're in the middle, I don't think a lot of people understand this till they're there. And anybody that's out there that's battalion chief, assistant chief, maybe a deputy chief, you know, you're serving three stakeholders. Number one, you're serving the companies below you, right? The companies below you want the leadership. They need the expectations. They need the time to prepare. What's your plan? You're serving the public, because obviously that's the people you're going to, you know, hey, I'm here, I'm the fire department, I'm going to fix whatever your problem is. But more than that, you know, you're a servant to the organization, whether in the fire department, maybe the city or the county you work for, to protect the integrity of that organization. So it is a very thankless job when you're in the middle, and you basically have three servants that you must work for.
Yeah, yes, yes, very much. Yeah, that, I mean, that frames it perfectly. I have a caller, so I know who it is, but it's important, just because, of the conversation we're having, I'm going to bring him on. So if you got a minute, Chief, you know, I want to bring him on just because it'd be good. So I got Steve Hamilton, called in. He's, you know, instructor at FDIC. He's a captain down in Fort Jackson, South Carolina. And he also, has helped with, the writing an SME part of the NFPA 3000. So, Captain Hamilton, thank you for calling, brother. I got you on. So anything that you want to add to our discussion tonight would be great.
Beer? Can I bring beer?
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, I'm on duty, so I can't tonight.
Yeah, whenever I try to bring something, I try to bring beer. No, I was catching the latter half of the 30 minutes, last 30 minutes, and picking up the conversation with the active shooter piece. I think some of the points that you were making are pretty poignant about, you know, it's high risk, absolutely low frequency, although some may think that the frequency is increasing. Analyze and look at those responses and do good exercise design and try to figure out, if that happened in my footprint, what am I going to do? How am I going to interlink with other brother sister agencies? Do we have enough ambulances to transport? What hospitals are we going to go to? Is there, there are so many unanswered questions that, as a fire service, because we're problem-solving people, we can ask those rhetorical questions because it's not our lane, but you know who to ask to get the answer. So I think it's important to work with your stakeholders, utilize your network, whether that be you know somebody who knows somebody that works within private ambulance service. And is it possible to engage private ambulance service as a backup or a catch-all in the event that you have an incident and your regular 911 truck service is overwhelmed, as an example? You're going to make that connection through your network. You're going to make that connection through the relationships that you've built or the relationships you have with people. So do that. We can problem solve. We can problem solve widget making if there were actual widgets. So do that. It's a sad state of affairs that we're in. Unfortunately, I think it's going to get worse. and not to advertise the concept, people watch. And when you see a small town of 15,000 people struggle to deal with that event or an event like that, you're giving people ideas. So the best way to honor the memories of others that are unfortunately lost is to honor them by trying everything within your power to not repeat the event.
Sure. Yeah, I agree with that. And just back to, you know, the stakeholder part, like you were saying, it's also knowing who these people are. You know, we can work 20 years in the same place and you don't know who all the people are until you meet them at the emergency. You know, like we should be on that first name basis with a lot of these guys that we're certainly going to run into when we're at these major events. So knowing who they are. Yeah. Steve, I appreciate you calling in, brother. I love everything that you always contribute. You know that. So it was nice that you listened in and that we sparked your interest with the conversation we were having with the active shooter piece. I know that's majorly in your wheelhouse. I know it's something you're very passionate about. So I appreciate you dialing in and sharing some of that. It means a lot. Thank you.
I appreciate you ignoring me as usual. I sent you a text and you were like, I'm going to bring you on. I said, no, don't do that. So, I appreciate that.
Would it be anything different than anything I do?
It's holistically accurate. Next time I call in, it's going to be from a ghost number.
There you
but
go.
Thank you. Thank you both. I really enjoyed listening.
Yeah. Thank you, brother. All right. So we're going to wrap it up here. So I will say, as far as you go, Chief, a lot of things that I like to talk to people about, this is always a hard question for people to answer, and that's great. It's been misunderstood through some of the people that I've talked to about it. You know, they always kind of attribute it to like, well, isn't that kind of egotistical? Like, no, it's not. Okay. The reason why I ask this question is because I want the audience to hear what you have to say, but I also want the audience to understand the importance of having a legacy. And the reason why is because that needs to be the purpose. After it's all said and done, you know, we can say all the sexy things like, well, I like helping people and I wanted to do this. And yeah, I got it. But there needs to be an end game. There needs to be something. You know, you can't just have done it to exist. Every single person that I've ever had on the show has always given me just an awesome answer. Not that one's better than the next, but they always continue to get good. I haven't heard a bad response yet. So I'll ask you, Chief Floyd, what type of legacy do you want to leave behind?
That's an interesting, that was the last question you sent me on the list. And I really thought about that today and, you know, doing soul searching. There's two ways I want to address that. Number one, professionally. So I've gone through my career and, like anybody in the fire service, we've worked with some good leaders. We've worked with some bad leaders. I want to, in leaving, I would hope that the floor, the fellows, anybody professionally that I worked with could say that I had a high standard and that I set a reasonable tone, a solid example of how a chief officer should think. And I mean that in terms of still being focused on the public need, being strategic. And we didn't talk much about strategic plans, but being strategic, but always focusing on the public need first and never getting out of touch with what the service is about. That's the example that I want to set and leave. Just that energy that whether it was 22 years and my goal right now is 10 more years in the fire service doing whatever someplace, whether it's Harrisburg or someplace, that energy never declined. I never got into a rut. I was resilient. If there were setbacks, I continued to forge on and have a productive career. And then the other side of it too is, and this is personal, Chief, I think you'll understand this, in taking my commitment to my profession very serious, to taking my commitment to my city that I work for very serious, I'm hoping that my children see that. And when I'm old, retired, that my kids can live and understand and say, look, my dad was cared about his career. He loved his career. Like, my dad never went to work. He was a workaholic, they would probably say, but he never really went to work, and he was invested all the way. And then I'm hoping in that example that my kids, whatever my son and daughter choose to do, and I will have no judgment on that, but I'm hoping they attack that with the same energy and the same desire to be productive in that industry. And so I guess in a way that's what I'm trying to set as an example for my children well to as an adult, in society. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah. It makes perfect sense. I never usually get to share mine, but that is, it's funny how it changes, as you get older. And I know, so I say to people, being a parent isn't a prereq. I know that unfortunately some people can't, and then by choice, some people don't want to, and that's fine. But if you are a parent, your priorities change because you live for someone else, and everything you do, that person's watching. They're watching you more than anybody else is watching. Your kids are watching you. You're the example. So,
there's definitely times that I carry home some negative energy, and that impacts my family. Mm-hmm. Many in our business have that, whether it be from organizational stress or maybe from call stress. The families that we have, they carry a burden with us, a heavy burden throughout our career as well, that has an impact on them. But more, I just want my kids to really say, hey, my dad was, I guess if my kids would just say, hey, my dad was a good fireman, that would be pretty good. I can live with that. I can be proud of that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's beautiful, man. I like that. I don't, because we're not done, because I'm going to give you back the floor, but you're right, and I apologize, because we said that we wanted to talk about strat planning and all that, and I think that if you're cool with it, we probably have to do another show where I could have you on.
Yeah, I'm absolutely. I'm in because I think that strategic planning element is really important. Like I told you earlier, if your organization doesn't have a strategic plan, if you don't have an idea of whether what mission you're going towards, or whatever direction it is, whether it's growth or decline or whatever it is, if you don't have that, I would compare it. I would think it would be like walking in the woods without a compass, like I said earlier, and you're walking in circles, but you don't necessarily know it until you, like, I don't know, maybe you see the same rock two or three times. So for me, and the other part about it for the organizational standpoint is I think it's a lot easier for the team to know that they're going to win if they know there's a plan and they know the pathway to get to the win. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That really makes sense. You and I were talking the other day. The strat plan thing is, and I'm not going to overdo it. Listen, so first of all, just for your understanding, so it's not like we only have an hour. So fire engineering gives me 3 hours to do a show. I typically try to keep them in an hour because I know, like, I don't want to listen to me for an hour, so I try to be mindful of that. But we're on it, and even though it totally takes away from how beautifully eloquent you put, you summed up about the legacy piece. We'll circle back. We'll circle back to that. But while we're on the subject, like I said, it doesn't matter about the timing. So if you got another minute, we're going to talk about it. And if you're still listening, thank you. And if you're in the car listening or you're working out on the podcast, hang out for a minute, because we're going to talk about some good shit right here, because it's important. And we don't talk about it. We talk about everything sexy, but we don't talk about strategic planning because it's not sexy.
Yep. Now it is not sexy.
It's not, it's really not. Going to fires and having the salty helmet and, and all that, that's sexy. And listen, I'm a buff. I do it, I just posted a picture of my new Taylor tin that I got on my helmet. I was all excited about it. I got it. I'm a whacker.
I like that.
Yeah, thanks. No, but, I'm a whacker. I got it, But, the reality is, as we were talking before about, like the growth in the leadership realm, going from that company officer to then the mid-level to the, the senior chief kind of senior tour commander or whatever positions, understanding why strategic planning is important and then how to actually plan strategically, understanding what SWOT means, understanding how and why, strengths and weaknesses and opportunities and threats, why they're important. And then understanding the difference, I've sat with people where, they overdo the strengths, everything's, I think we're pretty good. That's a strength, it's like, well, is it, or is it an opportunity? Cause we're not doing it right now, but you think it's something that we could be doing, so understanding community risk reduction, community risk assessments, these are the things, and these tools are out there. These are the things that help you and your organization, move forward and develop into one, solidifying and justifying and securing the things that you need to keep your organization growing. But then two is you're more aware of what it is that you're dealing with by doing these needs assessments and exposing the gaps and doing the gap analysis. So, we have a minute to talk about it because you and I talked about the other day. And for the listener, I want you to understand, if you're looking to get into leadership, all of the sexiness about being a leader is important. All of those books that, you talked about, Chief, and that everybody knows that are out there, they're important. But another thing that you will find is being good at planning and strategic planning is gonna definitely make or break you, especially as we grow into the future of the fire service. So I'd be interested in your take on this.
Well, I think from the strategic planning standpoint. So, and I want to keep this somewhat brief because I do this again for the Commonwealth and I help these outside agencies. The number one thing is every community out there is changing in some aspect. Every community. Population's increasing, is decreasing. The ethnicity of the religions are changing in some nature. That changes the dynamics of the community. Crime rates, educational rates, economic rates. I mean, you can look at this from a number of different indexes. That all changes the complexities of the fire service, the fire department, as it engages with the public. And then those changes, like you said, those gaps, those inconsistencies drive the resource needs that we have to fulfill via budget, hiring, apparatus purchasing, and then that drives all the way down to the street level, to the operations level of how are we going to train. Now we bring in the training piece. How are we going to train and prepare our people to fill those changing environments that we're dealing with? It's crazy, but that strategic plan literally bleeds from the position of the mayor, council, fire chief, the highest level of government. It bleeds down and it affects the lowest, the rookie firefighter in the firehouse. It changes everything we do. So we need to align that into a plan, and usually it's a tiered plan, so that we can go year to year, budget cycle to budget cycle, process to process, and basically manage it, so that we're getting from point A to some future desired, perfect firehouse or fire department that we would like to get to. It's like walking up the mountain. It's small steps to get up the mountain. And that's what a strategic plan is. We have to put this into some type of logical order. And I hear people all the time. I know what I'm going to hear. Every good plan gets ruined. Every plan changes. You can't plan for all this. Well, I would disagree. And I do understand that plans can change. We can edit plans, but then what is the alternative? Let's play the alternative, Chief. We don't have a strategic plan. Then what are you doing in that aspect? In my opinion, you're shooting from the hip, or in other words,
yes,
you're making shit. You're making shit up.
Yep.
And professionally,
you're reactive
and
you're impulsive.
Yeah. Professionally, I don't think that is the way we should operate as a service. I think we should be, deliberate, strategic, and focused.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Oh, that's beautiful. You're absolutely right. You know, and the other thing is, listener, understand just for you, for your own reassurance, you'll get that pressure, like you were talking about, Chief. You know, like with the, you know, oh well, plans can fail and blah blah blah. So you'll get that, and it may be unpopular in the moment, and so it's going to be tough for you to still continue to be passionate about it, right? But also, the best form, at least for me, and it's hard because, you know, people that are good, you know, good at strategy, they see the end game, they see the goal, they see it. And it's actually a curse for those, you know, strategic mind leaders. You know, it's a curse to be strategic because you see 10 moves down and,
exactly.
And other, you can't convince anybody else to see what you're seeing. Cause it's just you, only you can see it. But where I'm trying to go with this is understand that it takes a lot of self-discipline in understanding that this is a marathon. It is not a race. You know, a good strategic plan is done meticulously and methodically. It is not done impulsively and just, oh, okay, so we did this wrong, so just from now on we're going to do this, and I'll send out a memorandum to everybody. Like, that's not being a good strategic planner.
The fear in strategic planning is the time investment because it is complex, and it's going to require internal and external stakeholder feedback, surveys. I mean, you know, we could go on and on about this, but again, how can you operate without that? Like, I don't understand in private industry, almost any CEO has some type of strategic plan to where they're moving their private business. In sports, every team, whether it's hockey or football or baseball, they start their season out with some type of strategy plan over the course of the season, if everyone stays injury-free, on how they're going to get to the playoffs or get to the big game. So, you know, how do we operate? How do we not the same thinking? I'm speaking at the strategic level. Obviously, you know, I understand, and like we talked about, it not being sexy. But when you have senior leadership in an organization, they should be putting their heads together as a coalition in a room and driving the organization to some end goal, someplace, some end state that is improved from where they currently are.
Oh, yeah. All day long, I agree. You know, and that's the thing is, you know, you and I get that, and again, just speaking for myself, like I said before, you know, it is very taxing. It is very frustrating.
Huge commitment.
Stressful.
Huge commitment.
Yeah, it's a yes. It is a huge commitment. But I want the people that are listening to understand, like, I'm not trying to advocate on, you know, CPSC or any of that. I don't care whatever you use. There's information out there on how to do it. It's just, I'm telling you because I'm in it right now. It's not something that anyone told me getting into leadership that I was going to need to know. And then the folks that did tell me that I thought I didn't take it serious. I'm like, you're just a fire nerd. You know, you're just a book guy. And that's why you look at the world that way. You know, I'm telling you, it's real. I don't think that I've ever been a great fireman, but I have been a fireman. And those
right.
who are listening know what I mean when I say that. And I'm telling you that, from a person who rode the engine, rode the truck, you know, I did a level of the work that I feel is a prereq of getting into the leadership realm. I'm living it right now that I wish that we had learned it earlier on the value of strategic planning because now I'm in a realm where I'm playing pickup and in an organization, because I didn't know, and neither did my predecessors know, why we should have been already putting together a plan and having, you know, those short term, those long term, you know, those tiered plans and goals, like you had said before. You know, I didn't know it then. And so, you know, you're kind of behind the curve. But the point is for you listening, if you're not doing it, start educating yourself now, because I promise it will put everything, it will literally frame everything in a way that there's visual evidence of what it is that you're trying to accomplish. And then as you're trying to advocate for other things, whether it be staffing or you know, funding toward recruitment or equipment, training, whatever. For the bean counters out there, we have captured the data to basically prove them wrong. And I'm not trying to say it's a war against them. It's just the same token, we weren't capturing data properly, that we weren't advocating for ourselves.
Correct.
For, you know,
we have
these
to
things that
service.
We needed, and it was perceived as a want. Well, if I'm capturing this properly, it's no longer a want. It's an absolute need. Look, here's the data.
Well, so, and one other item, Chief, one other item to add with this strategic planning process that you know, should happen. You know, the other thing it defends against is the succession of a leader. So, you know, we have this plan and, you know, Chief McGlynn decides he's going to retire this year. He has enough money in the pension. Decides he's going to go. We're only halfway through the plan, and now this other chief steps up. He gets promoted. Instead of a change in direction, because this new person, now the municipality can have consistency in still moving through the plan and knowing what's going on. So I think it stabilizes the fire department over a longer period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that succession planning is another key element. You know, I agree with you. We have to do another show on this, because I know that we can continue to go on about it. And with your background in education on it, I want you to speak about it. I'm going to see if we can do this next month, because I have another show next month, and I'm going to see if we can do it for next month. I'll work it out with you as far as the scheduling part of it goes. And
absolutely.
I'll even see
absolutely.
If we can get a couple people.
We can make it happen.
Some of these. Yeah, it would be awesome. It would be awesome. I'm almost going to end it, but I'm going to give you the floor. Anything, you know, the floor is yours. Any last final words from you for the listener that you want to pass on? The floor is yours, brother. Go ahead and take it.
Okay, so I would say two things. Number one, I try to remind everybody two things. You come to work tomorrow, you're going to your respective firehouse, you're going to your respective, EMS agency, maybe you're a medic, maybe you're a policeman, whatever. Come to work, number one, care about the job, protect the job, the honor of what has been built long before us. Many have contributed to the public confidence that we have, continue to feed into that. All I ever ask is, you know, people come to work is to care and contribute to a little bit of development every day. I think like right now, like the last 6 months, I'm kind of on a little bit of a personal growth mission. You know, I'm doing some physical fitness things for myself that I've been putting off. I'm still working my master's degree, trying to find some challenges for myself. Come to work, care about the job, expand yourself, invest in your company. It's okay to put your heart out there. You know, it's okay to put your heart in this. Everyone says it's okay to love the job. It's absolutely okay. Many of us out there, sometimes we don't always like our agency, our organization, maybe forgot about us, or maybe our organization we don't agree with where we're going. The public doesn't care about that. Get on the fire truck. What it's about. It's not about your love of the organization. It's about taking care of the people that need us to be firemen, policemen, or paramedics. I'm going to leave on that note.
It's a good note to leave on. I appreciate you calling in. We're going to hopefully be able to pick this up in June with the continuation on the strat plan piece. I appreciate you, brother. I appreciate everything that you do for us in the fire service. that you do for us here in Pennsylvania. And just, I appreciate you being on the show, man. And it means a lot. It was definitely good stuff.
It's been a privilege to discuss with the group, and hopefully some listeners out there are energized. And hey, everybody out there, you're not alone. The problems you're dealing with, man, there's many of us that are working through our careers the same as you are.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, I appreciate it, brother. Listen, for all the listeners, I appreciate everything that you guys do, and I appreciate you listening in. And I want to tell you thank you so much, and God bless, and stay safe. This is Dave McGlynn with Fire Engineering Podcast, Networking for Success. You guys stay safe.
Thanks for tuning in to Fire Engineering Talk Radio.